Government Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this December the 29th on the West Coast, now December the 30th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone, as well as in Argentina and places to the east, all the way across the Atlantic Ocean into Europe, into Asia, and points beyond. We have listening audience all over the world, and we want to welcome also those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world. Got a very special guest tonight, and before we bring him on, I thought I would select some music to open the show with that deals with the flavor of the area where he comes from. Now, music is one thing that certainly binds people together, and you're going to be listening to a collection of musicians from around the world who happen to like a particular style of music. And this features Arturo Sandoval, and on the lead vocal, Mr. Ray Ruiz. And this is a song dedicated to a king, but this king's name is Tito.
Siempre jovial. hace vibrar mi trompeta. Con toda mi admiración, que se entere el mundo entero, hoy quiero reconocer al rey de los timbaleros.
That was Arturo Sandoval and Tito. And, of course, that song is about Tito Puente. If we're going to worship a king on earth, and it's not going to be our Lord Jesus the Christ, then certainly we could worship the king of timbales. This song is a happy song. Why would I play happy music on such a serious show? Well, I'm rejoicing the fact that we have with us again tonight, all the way from Argentina, a journalist, a documentary film producer, and an international economist extraordinaire who has taken upon himself to look at the problems that we have, which are not just exclusive to Argentina, but America, Canada, Great Britain, certainly all of Europe, and the whole world about to be swept under with this oppressive system calling itself the New World Order. I invite back again to Evident Footprints on this New Year's Eve, my good friend, Mr. Adrian Salbucci. Adrian, welcome to the show.
Hello, Don. Thank you very much indeed. I'm very pleased to be on your show. Thank you for having me. And that music was really very good. It sent everybody dancing here in my house. It's 3 a.m. here, and at least the cat and the dog were dancing to that rhythm. So it was a good start.
Well, I know that people who love Latin music love all kinds of Latin music, and they're not prejudiced in that way. So I figured I couldn't go wrong if I picked something that had a nice dance groove.
So. You certainly hit the nail on the head.
Well, I'm glad everyone enjoyed it. How have you been, my friend, besides business?
Very, very good, very busy, trying to get things going. We're working, actually, particularly busy because I'm trying to promote the whole Second Republic project, both in English and in Spanish. And it's not just a language problem, but it's also the fact that we have two realities. One is we're trying to do this for the English-speaking world, where we're trying to share the experience of Argentina and other countries in the area. And then for my own country in Argentina, a series of very interesting opportunities are cropping up. So we have a very good, hopefully what should be turn out to be a good action plan for 2011 that might help us to promote even more Second Republic amongst public opinion down here.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've been doing some writing, and recently you published another book, The Coming World Government, Tragedy and Hope. And I've been reading that. I have not completed it, but it's very eye-opening. And certainly, if anyone is looking for solutions, you are presenting them.
Well, thank you. Actually, it's my first book in English, because I've written actually five books, but they were all, for obvious reasons, in Spanish, since I live in Argentina, Spanish-speaking country, and all our neighbors are also Spanish-speaking countries. But since I started being lucky in the sense that, you know, a lot of folks like yourself especially have been interviewing me on U.S. and European radios, and I've had the fortune of meeting and being a friend of G. Edward Griffin and all the folks at Freedom Force International. So I figured, you know, the time was ripe not to translate any of my books from Spanish, because none of them would actually do. My books in Spanish have been pretty successful. Actually, my main book, I've just published a fifth edition in Spanish on the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission, how the global power structures work. And it has been successful not so much because of its creativity, but it's practically the only book in the Spanish language that exists describing what the CFR and the Trilaterals and the Rockefellers and the banking cabals and these things are. Whilst in English, we do have a lot of very, very, very good literature, starting with The Creature from Jekyll Island by G. Edward Griffin, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But there was practically nothing of that in Spanish, and as far as I know, Ed's book has not been translated into Spanish. So, you know, if none of my books in Spanish would be probably of interest to English-speaking audiences. What I thought I'd do would be to bring together other stuff that we had been publishing and put it in English, where I tried to bring to the table some practical examples and share some of the experiences, some of the dreadful experiences that we have had in Argentina, where although we are all subject to the effects of the global power elite's mischief, normally the United States and Europe have been on the winning side, so it never really bothered you too much. We, unfortunately, have been on the losing side. So we've been clobbered time and again, and I even go as far as to try to show that at least in recent decades, Argentina has served as a sort of testing bench, mm-hmm. to see how they can promote certain dreadful social experiences, but which can be very much contained, and they were in fact contained to Argentina, and see how people react, see how you can macro-manage these processes, see how you can control entire populations through psychological warfare. And that's why when things started looking so bad, unfortunately, for America and Europe and the rest of the world, starting in 2008, especially mid-September 2008, well, a lot of things that started happening then, they rang a lot of bells, because we've gone through them several times. I think I mentioned this in one of our previous interviews. I'm 58 right now, Don, mm-hmm. and I've gone in my adult life, I've gone through three major financial, economic, and social collapses in my country in 1975, and then a much worse one in 1989 when we had one of the worst hyperinflations in the history of the world. I think it's the fourth worst hyperinflation after Germany, Hungary, and Zimbabwe, I think, something like that. That was in 1989, more than 10,000% inflation in 1 year. And then in 2001, 2002, we underwent total banking, financial, and monetary meltdown. And it's not just the actual figures. I could tell you, well, our GDP went down by 40%, and the dollar went up by 400%, the price of the dollar, because of inflation. But those are just numbers. It's the actual social hardship, the breakdown of law and order, the breakdown of the distribution and payment chains throughout the economy that really wreak major havoc, and how people often have no choice but to try to cope with that.
Yes. Now, you were describing something that actually, I'm 59, so I'm 1 year older. And although we have not suffered a lot of the violence that you have, our boys have been, and women have been taken into wars, illicit wars. Our people have been drugged. Our financial system is totally corrupt. And they have been lying to us about the true status of the American economy since 1933. Technically, we can go back even before that. You mentioned G. Edward Griffin and the creature from Jekyll Island. We can go back several hundred years, and we can see that that various world characters had their fingers in the pie from the outset, from when this country was first founded. It was all done secretly, and I don't mean to demean what you're saying about your experiences in Argentina, because we've not experienced those things. But we've had our own version of that, and the international impression of the United States from years ago, following world wars and Vietnam and Korea, and now we have two wars in Iraq and then another one in Afghanistan, and people are beginning to really see what is going on, what has been going on. And meanwhile, they're speeding up the agenda because we are waking up. Your words absolutely describe what is going on here in America. Absolutely. And I'm referring to your new book as well. You do outline the role of the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the secret think tanks that control the government, and you mention many of the same organizations that I've researched and found that they're tied into everything that's going on today. So you're going to have a lot of people very interested in what you have to say.
You know, Don, whilst I was listening to you, you mentioned something that I often tell my people down here when I give a conference or make a presentation, the sense that, yes, we Argentinians have gone through a lot of hardship, and yes, the standard of living in America and in Europe has been much better than it has been in Argentina over the past 30 years, and the same goes for most of the countries down here. However, there is probably not one single Argentinian family that has the pain of having had either a father or a brother or a son or a daughter dying in a foreign war, and then discovering that, for example, in the case of Iraq, which is probably the worst case, even worse than Vietnam, that they went there and they're still dying there, and especially in Iraq, over just one big gigantic lie, alleged weapons of mass destruction that never appeared for the simple reason that they never existed. I mean, the lying, the outright blatant lying of the Bush government, and now continued to a certain extent by the Obama government, is so outright criminal that I can place myself compassionately in the shoes of a family that has lost a dear, a loved one, or just as bad, perhaps somebody comes back missing a leg or missing an arm or with severe psychological strain, severe psychological damage. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of American families right now that are in that situation. And then we realize that, yes, in Argentina, we can complain about the economic and social hardship, but we don't have to complain about probably the worst thing that can happen to any family, which is what I was just describing, losing a loved one over a total and absolute lie. So, you know, I think that the key point, and this make I'm a born optimist. I will always see the glass half full, never half empty. Mm-hmm. I think that the fact that we have internet, the fact that we have folks as yourself running such great programs like Evident Footprints is the reason why Zbigniew Brzezinski, the ideological founder of the Trilateral Commission back in 1973, a director of the Council on Foreign Relations and Jimmy Carter's former national security advisor, just mentioned at a CFR meeting in Montreal that you can read between the lines that one of the worst fears, one of the greatest threats to the global power elite is, quote, the growing political awakening and awareness of populations the world over. So we're still probably a minority. Probably the majority of people are your basic Homer Simpsons. Every country has a variation of them who will believe what CNN tells them or what the New York Times tells them or what the Daily News tells them. But there is a growing significant sector of public opinion in America and Canada and Argentina, in Europe, the world over, that are starting to realize that things are very different. And we mustn't lose sight of the fact that every major social change, even every major revolution, the best sense of the word, like the American Revolution, has always been done by a small, compact group of aware people who have the willingness, the willpower, the bravery, the discipline to go forward, say what they have to say, fight for their ideas. And they, in other words, you and me included, are the world changers, the people who will actually change the world. So I think we're getting to that point where we will have the necessary critical mass to make a real global click. People will all of a sudden become aware. And that critical mass is much smaller than most people fathom.
Yes. You mentioned, Adrian, many of the players behind the scenes who have the money and the political clout to sort of steer things in the direction they want things to go for their own financial benefit. Usually it's about finances or controlling large conglomerates of business, industry, and anywhere. It really doesn't matter. In fact, most of the huge corporations that were the largest employers in the country have left the country for the sake of cutting their costs. The quality of products goes down, the prices go up higher still, even though they're making money hand over fist. And it's the same group of people whose names come up. They end up working for firms like Goldman Sachs or Citicorp. In particular, Goldman Sachs is a revolving door into the U.S. Treasury and the Federal Reserve. It's quite evident what's going on, and these are the people who are receiving all the benefits of these bailout funds and all the benefits of the corrupt financial instruments that they're selling via treasury certificates and bonds. And people have to wake up to the fact that that is going on. I've been talking about it steadily for 4 years. And when I mentioned the word trillion, everyone said, you're crazy. You're nuts. That's a pipe dream. And now the media throws that word trillion out like it's nothing, like they've been doing it for 100 years.
They slush trillions backwards and forwards, upwards and downwards, as though it were just pocket change, you know. Whilst you were talking, I was remembering that old 1970s movie, Cabaret, where Liza Minnelli sings that beautiful song, Money Makes the World Go Around. Mm-hmm. And this is a pure case of money does indeed make the world go around, because the power of the money power is so huge that they can lie straight at your face, looking at you straight in the camera, like the guys from the Goldman Sachs and from just about every banking cartel, or like Bernanke, you know, when he is asked, can you tell us what banks you have given these trillions of dollars? And he looks back at the Senate committee and says, no. And that's the end of that. So, you know, these guys have a capacity, an ability to lie, which is so huge, so flagrant, basically because they know they have huge power. And I think that has a lot to do, Don, and I mentioned that in my book, with the fact that one of the most important phenomena after the Second World War in particular, as these global power structures grew, not just the banks as handlers of money, not just the oil companies as handlers of oil, not just the mining companies, not just the media and so forth, but but much more important and above them, the planning centers, those entities like the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Royal Institute of International Affairs, the Project for a New American Century, whose purpose it is to prepare medium and long-term planning. And especially when the psychological warfare that has been unleashed against populations, especially in the United States, is that they have trained us all to become short-term thinkers. We have to do things fast. We have to grow economically fast. We have to have this ready for, you know, we have to close the quarter. So we have to reach, if you're a corporation, proper results, because otherwise the Wall Street analysts will not give you the right grade. We're doing everything short-term. term, and yet we lose sight of the fact that what really counts are the medium and long-term processes. So these guys are re-engineering the entire planet, medium and long-term, in such a way that we are trained not to understand and not even to see the medium and long-term, but we're always going on we're always on the verge of a nervous attack because of the short-term. And one of those medium and long-term processes that has gone pretty much unnoticed is the fact that power, in other words, the ability to do something, like it or not, whether it's just or not, and the ability also to avoid that certain other things should take place, that power, which was normally and traditionally and for hundreds of years associated with the nation, the king, the president, the prime minister, he had the final power, the buck stops here type thing. That power is no longer in public institutions, but it has migrated into private institutions. Mm-hmm. And what we have today is the privatization of power. So whilst you had major power focused on public institutions, you could at least turn to those public institutions and say, hey, Mr. President or Mr. Prime Minister or Mr. King or Queen, you are a head of state, and the function of the state is to look after the common good and the national interest. And they had to give you a pretty good excuse for not doing it. However, when power migrates into private structures, you cannot look at Walmart or Boeing or Halliburton or Exxon or Chase Manhattan or Goldman Sachs and say, hey, you guys, you have to look after the common good, because they'll turn around you and say, no way, I'm Goldman Sachs. My main obligation is to my shareholders. I have to just generate profits. So if something is not profitable for me, for example, even though it might be good for the common good, that's not my problem. So that, in a way, helps to explain why we have an increasingly unbalanced and unjust world, where you have, for example, 953, I think that's the latest figure from Forbes magazine, 953 multi-billionaires who have more money and more assets than 2.5 billion people who are starving, and they have illness and they have sickness and they have war and they don't have proper water, proper education, proper anything. So, and in a way, when you turn to these guys and say, hey, can we do something about it? They'll say, well, that's not my problem. That's not what I'm here for. I'm Goldman Sachs. I'm Halliburton. I'm Exxon. I do something else. And every now and then they might be cute and might say, okay, we're going to set up a foundation and we might donate a couple of $1 million to help investigate AIDS or send some food to, I don't know, the dying and the hungry in Haiti after the earthquake. But they do it because they are philanthropists. Like George Soros is an alleged philanthropist. The guys even take the liberty of doing that. So I think we have to implement a very important paradigm shift, so that we start seeing things the way they really are and stop interpreting the present world with the paradigms of the beginning of the 20th century. I think the important thing, and you do a great job at that, and I try to do it also, is to tell people, hey, we're in the 21st century. Wake up. Look at the world with 21st century eyes, and not even the 2010 eyes, but look at it with the eyes of 2020 and 2030. Try to project where these guys are leading us and look at where they want to take us, and then look back, and you'll understand why we still have a window of opportunity to counteract that, and we should be doing that, and we should be doing that fast.
Mm-hmm. Now you wrote about, I'm going to use it in this order, formal power and real power. The formal power being the public institutions, the authorities that speak on behalf of the school systems or religions or the banking system or commerce, and this privatization, which is really the illegal transfer of public property into private hands, is a sort of or a type of theft and fraud.
Yeah, and
certainly the means at which this is done is fraudulent, and yet all the normal safeguards. You know, if you say, well, we have $1 trillion in paper money scattered around the country. There is supposed to be $1 trillion in gold to back that up. And that's not the case. The gold has been stolen. And they're stealing the paper, too. You know, it's become exactly digitized. Now, I know that you've probably experienced something similar in Argentina. Or have you? And what have you learned about being able to change that?
Well, we've experienced that as bad or even worse, although the relative numbers are much smaller down here because we are less population, a much smaller economy, and so forth. But yes, all the gold, for example, you mentioned gold. All the gold that used to be in the Argentine Central Bank was willingly and voluntarily transferred to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York because it's safer to keep it there. That was the official explanation. In other words, we've given up all our gold bullion. And at the same time, gigantic gold deposits have been found in Argentina and in Chile. You might know, but Argentina is a vast country with unlimited wealth in terms of oil, mining, gas, water, foodstuff, fishing, just about everything you can imagine. A huge territory. We have the sixth largest territory in the world, and we're only 40 million people. In other words, we have almost six times the territory of France, but they're 70 million people, and we're only 40 million people. And to make matters worse, we are demographically very badly distributed. About 80% of the population lives in 1% of the territory. We're all cluttered into major cities and so forth. And for example, Patagonia, which is the southern part of Argentina, and where a lot of the mining and gas and oil and all the wealth actually is almost uninhabited. There is a sector on the Andes Mountains between Argentina, shared actually by Argentina and Chile, where both governments of Chile and of Argentina in the year 2003-2004 agreed with Barrick Gold to give them a whole sector where these guys are taking out more gold than you can possibly imagine. They're not giving us 1 cent for it, and they're using it's open air mining. They're using very poisonous system with arsenic and other very poisonous products to bring it out. Where they're actually given by a treaty signed by both Argentina and Chile limited sovereignty. So it's practically a sovereign area that belongs to Barrick Gold. We should call it Barrick Republic or something like that. And yet, the way these guys do it, instead of saying, oh, Barrick Gold came in with Black Hawk helicopters and took over that, no, that would look very bad in the 6 o'clock news. What these guys do is they identify the worst social elements in Argentina, for example, either because they are ignorant, either because they are ambitious, either because they are crooks, corrupt, and absolutely vicious. They say, these are my future politicians. They will finance them personally, finance their political campaigns, finance their parties. They get all the media coverage. When the election time comes around, they get the hundreds of millions of pesos or dollars to finance their presidential or senatorial or governor campaigns. They put them into power, and then they use them as CEOs. And the president of Argentina, not just the present president of Argentina, but the presidents of Argentina over the past 35, 40 years have acted as caretaker government, the president himself or herself being a CEO. And what they are there to do is to enact legislation, take measures, sign decrees that will always be aligned to the interest of the global power elite and its corporations, whether they be banks, airlines, oil companies, mining companies, whatever, so that these people can come into the country and legally steal our wealth, legally keep the country down, legally keep the country weak, instead of having to do something as ugly or as nasty as saying, okay, we're going to invade Argentina. There's no need for that. So that what we end up having, and I know you have that in America also, but with different characteristics, is any so-called democracy that is subordinated to money is no democracy whatsoever, because money is not democratic, nor should it be even. So what we end up having is the best democracy money can buy, which is a phrase we use down here a lot, and I know you use it also a lot in the States.
Yes. In terms of the power structure, do you see the government more as acting as an agent? It's sort of a host, if you will. You know, in a lot of the alien movies, there's a host person who's infested with an alien that pops out of it, and then it wreaks havoc. Do you sort of see the government acting as just an agent for these international conglomerates?
Oh, you bet, Don. They are infested. I like that word. That's exact word. Look, I'll give you a very specific example regarding Argentina, which ties into what we have, you know, our Second Republic proposal for Argentina, or Second Republic proposition, has five pillars. And one of them, the third one, is that we should investigate our public debt, because Argentina's main problem, the main reason, the main lever whereby they control us, is that we have a huge unpayable, at least on the present circumstances, unpayable public debt. So what do the bankers do? They roll it over and make it bigger, 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 and bigger. And the specific case of Argentina, probably where the country in the best position to do what I'm about to say, is that since that debt was can be traced back to an illegal civilian and military government that forcibly took over power in 1976, ousting the democratically elected government, which was of Perón at that time, who did not contract any debts practically at all. As a matter of fact, he was paying out all the debts and just getting rid of the problem. In 1976 onwards, they started taking loans from all the major banks. At that time, it was Chase Manhattan Bank, Citicorp, Manufacturers Hanover Trust, Chemical Bank, Banque Nationale de Paris, and so forth. And that debt just grew and grew. However, all that Argentina would need to do would be to investigate that debt, show that it can be classed as odious debt, which is a judicial concept that was coined in the 1920s by a guy by the name of Alexander Sack in France, who used to be the Russian Tsar's treasury minister, which says that a government when a people recover democratic government, they don't have the obligation of paying the debts incurred by an illegal authoritarian government. And there's a lot of precedent on that, even involving arbitration by the United States, for example, between Costa Rica against the Royal Bank of Canada in the 1920s. And I think it was William McKinley, who was at that time president of the Supreme Court, who judged in favor of Costa Rica. But, you know, until a few years ago, Argentina would have had to go back to precedent at the beginning of the 20th century or the 1920s. However, in 2004, George W. Bush made a huge potential favor to Argentina, and nobody seems to understand this in Argentina because, as you say, they are all agents. He condoned 85% of the Iraqi debt, and he forced France, Germany, Spain, Italy, Russia, Britain, and I think it was Holland, to go along with him, to follow him, because he said that debt, that Iraqi debt, was incurred by a monster by the name of Saddam Hussein. He did not use the term odious debt, but I remember that the French government said, okay, we'll go along with this, but careful, because other countries can come up with the same idea. He made no names. Now, we could easily say, okay, if Saddam Hussein was a monster, and he was, well, the military who took over power in Argentina picked up a lot of people, killed something like 30,000 who disappeared overnight because the regime didn't like them. Well, they were monsters too. Why should we pay the debt that they incurred? Why should we not follow the same example of George W. Bush as he did with Saddam Hussein? However, in order for this to occur, somebody has to take the initiative, and that somebody has to be either the president of Argentina or the Argentine Congress. And yet the system works so well that over the past 30 years, not one single democratically elected president, not one single Congress has even dared to insinuate that our foreign debt should be investigated. And even though there are two judges who have ordered Congress to do so, Congress just whistles and looks the other way. And every president, including the Kirchners, do nothing but roll over the debt, make it grow bigger and bigger. And Nestor Kirchner, the previous president, went so far as paying $10 billion, which was the full amount owed to the IMF. That was back in January 2006. And the present president, who happens to be his wife, Cristina Kirchner, is paying $6.7 billion to the Paris Club. And she has the toupee to say that that includes 43%. 43% of that amount includes debt incurred by the horrendous military regime. So she's even saying that she's paying that money incurred by the military, and she's paying it with taxpayer money. So more agent, more CEO, more caretaker government than that, you can practically have no other example.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because they collect that money, and that money goes somewhere, but it goes to a bottomless pit. You know, it's they're not really.
Bernanke knows a lot about that.
Yeah, they're not paying off any debts with it. They're using this money to seed all of their derivatives and hedge funds and Ponzi schemes.
Exactly.
And the average person can't comprehend what that is, but it's as simple as looking at the comprehensive annual financial report, the fact that they zero it out at the beginning of each fiscal year.
Yes,
even
sure.
Though you mentioned them rolling over the debt. Well, where does that actually lie? It lies in our laps. We're held responsible for that. Certainly, they wouldn't steal money from us and pay the expenses that are incurred in the process. They want us to pay for it. They want us to. Go ahead.
Yeah, we should all, especially in America, really start looking at the consolidated annual financial reports, which nobody looks at, and where you have literally hundreds of thousands of U.S. Allegedly public corporations that publish them discreetly, and you have the real figures in there, and they are the ones that that really count. You know, that is where the nitty gritty really is. And if you would allow me, I'd just like to put in one comment, which I think is important. Global, you know, this whole system is based on permanent growth, and they think that growth is good, you know, and growth is not always good. Ask a cancer patient if growth is always good, and he will say, no way. But anyway, they put that myth that growth is good. When growth started tapering off, they said, okay, let's see how we can tap into certain revenue flows, which are state-owned companies, for example, in Latin America, by privatizing them, tapping into all that money, getting them dirt cheap, and we can continue growing. So that was the privatizations of the 1990s. But that also stopped. And what's happened, and you know, the derivatives market is a phenomenon of only the last 15, maximum 20 years, is that they said, okay, since we can't grow in the real economy because we just have no more revenue flows, let's start growing in the fake economy. And that's where the derivatives came in, which is just virtual growth. It's Excel spreadsheet growth. It doesn't exist anywhere. And now they've reached a collapse point. So if you look at it, what they are now trying to do, and I think that's where they are re-engineering our world into such a horrific place, since they can't grow, they have to control expenses. They have to control consumption. And now we're really going into a Marxist, Stalin-style gulag where they're going to tell us, okay, you can only consume so much. You can only live in such and such a place. Your workplace will be here because we control the labor market. And, you know, they are migrating towards what probably would have been Joseph Stalin's best dream, because they now have the technology to do what Joe Stalin couldn't do back in the 30s and the 40s.
Yes. You know, we're hearing stories about our water being shipped to foreign countries, say to China, for example, our drinking water or, you know, our resources, the Great Lakes are filling up ships and secreting this water overseas. And is that because China had loaned several trillions of dollars and that was stolen? And then they loaned more money and it was stolen again?
Yeah.
You know, these are the types of things that are going on. So they're not fixing anything. See, we have the statutes in place in the legal system. The RICO statutes cover racketeering, influence, corruption, or organized crime, whatever you want to call it. That's what government has become, nothing but organized crime.
Exactly. Legally organized.
Yes.
Legally, that's the worst
part. But not lawful.
No, exactly.
And there's a difference. Now, do you have the same constitutional issues in Argentina that we have here in America?
Oh, absolutely, and even much worse, because let's face it, the American Constitution is a hell of a good document, And okay, people are not abiding by it, or rather, government is not abiding by it. But it is a hell of a good document. Argentina, to make matters worse, we're something like into our fourth constitution. The one we have right now is really dreadful. Amongst other things, it gives political parties full monopoly for all political action, which means that, you know, the political party is probably the most money-dependent social structure one can imagine. And on top of that, our governments permanently breach the Constitution. For example, the Constitution says the president shall be in power for 4 years, and we are permanently changing the date of the elections. Presidents are leaving 2 years early. The guy who comes in after him might stay for a year, which is what happened over the past decade, and then another guy will come in, but he'll stay 4.5 years because that's the way it all turns out. So we become used to it being an extremely sloppy, breached document. Article 75 of our Constitution, which is pretty similar to a similar article in America, says Congress shall do all matters pertaining to public debt, and yet that has been done by decree by the executive branch over the past 20 years, and it's the executive branch who are permanently and secretly agreeing with the major banks paying out huge amounts of money, and that is not even published by the Ministry of Economy, by the central bank, and we just don't even know what they're paying. As a matter of fact, when Argentina this is about 15 years ago, try to determine how much do we owe the banks. You know what they did? They asked the banks. They asked Citicorp, JP Morgan, Chase, and so forth, say, hey, how much do we owe you? And they came back and say, you owe me X billion dollars, and we took that for good. I mean, it is so much against the public interest, so much against the common good that, you know, it's just flagrant, outright crime. We've had, for example, the guy who negotiated the Brady bonds with Nicholas Brady when he was George Bush Sr.'s Secretary of the Treasury back in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. The guy was so cozy with Nicholas Brady that when he finished the mega swap, he founded an investment company with Nicholas Brady, the name of which is an anagram of Brady's name. It's called Darby Investments. And this guy, by the name of Daniel Marks, of all names, he is his partner. So, you know, these guys are, talk about a revolving door, they are absolutely on both sides of the scene. Now, the one thing, however, whether it be in Argentina, and Argentina is particularly interesting because we're far away, we're not too big, we're not too small, and I still think that we can get away with a couple of things that probably would be much more difficult to get away with in America, because if America falls, they have a problem. If Argentina goes haywire, they'll say, well, you know, we'll deal with them at some point. But the thing that gives me a lot of optimism is that the only way that the global power elite can do all these crimes, all this mischief, all this corruption in America, in Europe, in South America, and so forth, is through permanent, huge masses of psychological warfare. So if anything, we have to consider not fighting them with arms, because we're going to lose, not even fighting them on politically on their rules, because if Don Nikoloff wants to become president of the United States, which would be very good for America, you don't have a chance. You don't have $600 or $700 or $800 million for your upcoming campaign. If you want to fight them through the media, they own the media. What we can do is a counter psychological warfare. And there, and I hate to say this because my dear friend Don, I am not a Marxist and I am not a communist, but the way to do it is to do it through counter psychological warfare, guerrilla warfare. In a way, because guerrilla warfare has something very interesting. You have small groups of people, highly flexible, highly creative, using surprise effect, using secrecy, and striking at very specific points and really wreaking havoc. Because the more complicated a system is, the more bulky and top-heavy it gets, in a way, the more vulnerable it becomes. So if every vulnerability that you or I can identify to this system automatically becomes a strength for our strategic planning. And there, little peep squeaks like you, me, and a lot of people who are listening now, we can do a lot, and we could do a lot of mischief to them. And every mischief we do upon them is a way of helping our peoples out, whether it be in America or in South America.
Mm-hmm. We do have those small little groups of people. They're called internet radio talk show hosts.
Yes.
Journalists, researchers. and yes, we do I'm in total agreement with what you're saying, obviously. Now, it's interesting that you went into Marxism and Stalinism. I got a question on a chat window here. What if, and this is looking at that system, what if this Marxist-Stalinist system ends up not being able to control the people? What do you think will happen?
Yeah, that's another good point. You know, I think, and I really think that's a very intelligent question and comment, that the system has become so complex, and for reasons that are perhaps not fully clear to any of us, but it doesn't matter, there is something that you and I have an idea about, and maybe the final facts, we don't know them, but there is something that is making the global power elite very nervous and very jittery, because they are on the verge of a nervous breakdown. They are rushing things. They are doing everything far too quickly. And I often ask myself, if they have all the power, they should have all the time in the world, what's the rush? It's like if you're pointing at me with a machine gun, three pistols, and a piece of artillery, I'm totally unarmed, but you're the guy who's nervous and sweating, I would say, hey, hang on a minute. I'm the guy who should be really jittery and getting very, very nervous. But I'm not. I'm calm, and he's nervous. So you figure we're missing some information. There's probably something, some internal weakness. It might even have to do with a split within the actual power structure, and they are fighting amongst themselves. And I think WikiLeaks, for example, is a good sign of that, that there is definitely something going on in there that that keeps them very much awake at night. Why do I say this? Because I don't think that they are going to be able to pull it through. Probably this global system as it stands today, I'm not going to say nobody controls it. Yes, there is the top, the apex of the pyramid does control it, but they know that they can lose control very quickly. It's like if you and I were just learning to fly aircraft and you and I were sitting at the controls of a Boeing 747 and we looked at each other and we'd say, are we flying it? Yep, we're flying it. We're controlling it, but we're both very nervous because we know we can really blow it at any moment and we can really make a big mistake and down we go and we will just crash and smash ourselves into smithereens. So in a way, they know that they are handling a huge monster, very powerful, that probably can even evade their control. This is one of the things I mentioned in the book. Power is not really ever in the firm hands of anybody. Power flows. So today they have it. They have it in their hands, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the CFR, the big banks, Halliburton, I don't know, George Bush and Obama. But power flows. It doesn't belong to anybody. It's like surfing. What does a surfer do? And this is something that we can do. A surfer just knows how to identify a wave, get on the wave, aboard the wave, maintain his balance, and then ride the wave. But he doesn't own the wave. And the wave can take him anywhere, can even kill him. And in a way, a good surfer, he doesn't have any engine, he doesn't have any motor, he doesn't even have to row. He just has to know how to stay balanced on top of the surfboard and ride the wave. They're riding it right now. But we could easily start riding the wave also. And believe it or not, I think that one of the things which is beautiful about the present day is that they can lose power and be displaced very quickly. But it all depends on how good Evident Footprint and all the other folks and programs trying to do this make people awaken. Because the power is really with we the people. The problem being that we're not organized, we're not enlightened, people are lazy, people get demoralized, people bicker, people concentrate and fight over secondary and tertiary matters without agreeing on the main issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been a rash of disinformation that comes out in the form of YouTube videos and articles that are trying to draw attention to outrageous acts being committed by TSA agents at the airports or you know, those types of stories that are designed to get people angry. Problem, reaction, solution. Problem, reaction, solution. And people aren't paying attention to problem, reaction, solution because they're not going to like the solution. This is all designed to move people into DNA testing and retina scanning and fingerprinting and microchipping, the whole nine yards. And they're doing that to the financial system. But I think you're right. And I don't think you're right. I know you're right. I want to say, I think what we're doing is hitting them from all the different angles, like they're doing to us. But we're bringing the truth out about the lies of history. We're bringing the truth out about what's really going on in the financial community, what's really going on throughout the course of an election. They think they won the election because they got their people there, but they would put their people there any way they had to. They declare martial law to install the people that they want in the government. They'll do that, but what they're not prepared for, I think, is the number of people that are waking up.
Well, you really hit the nail on the head there. You know, when I was, as I was saying at the beginning of the program, I was very lucky at the beginning of this year of sharing a conference where the two main speakers were G. Edward Griffin and myself in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And one of the ideas that came up there, that's when we started saying, you know, let's work together towards Second Republic Project and so forth. And one of the concepts that I had really not thought of thoroughly, and it opened my eyes, was you and I can talk about the need to liberate America and for freedom in America and for freedom in Argentina, and that you and I should work for our respective countries and get other people to do the same in other countries. But there is one step before that, which came up when we had this meeting in the States earlier this year. And that's that before you can think about the sovereignty of your people and your country and your state, you have to think about your own personal sovereignty.
Yeah.
So, for example, we're setting up a website called SecondRepublicProject.com. And the first thing you'll see when you visit that site is a button that says personal sovereignty. And under personal sovereignty, we very briefly describe, which is a code of honor, the way G. Edward Griffin would say, what we describe there are the nine, we call them nine noble virtues, which are personal. In other words, honor, truth, loyalty, discipline, perseverance, work, freedom, bravery, and solidarity. If you don't have those nine principles well in your mind, well in your heart, actually, if you don't actually honor them on a daily basis, if you don't adjust your own personal behavior with your family, with your neighbors, with your work colleagues, with the people at the university, with anybody on the street, to those values, then what national freedom are you talking about? What national independence are you talking about? And the more people we have who really take back their personal sovereignty, which is really means thinking with your own mind and not with the global power elite's mind through the New York Times and CNN and all the stupidity that you see on television, the more truly sovereign individuals you have, boy, they're going to be in a lot of trouble. And I think that that is what we have to fight for. Sure, we have to then, you know, do combined political action. But the important thing is to recover people's minds and people's hearts so that we are all sovereign individuals. And they are absolutely morally weak and ethically perverse and decadent. So they haven't got a chance in the long run against us.
Mm-hmm. I agree. In fact, I've been talking about this very topic for months. For most of this year, this whole thing about consciousness and realizing our true, you know, God-given power.
Yep.
If I could, I would add creativity as number 10, because...
Yeah, well that's what we're doing right now.
Right. Really? Okay. I don't mean to step on your toes, but...
You're right.
Ultimately, the goal of the sovereign being is to create. Not to destroy, but to create. And that's the thing that we're forbidden to do. Everything's geared to stopping us from that. Adrian, I know that you have possibly a shortage of time, but I did want to play some more music and give the folks where you are another chance to dance.
I'd be delighted.
Let's contemplate what we might... wrap up the show with here in tying this together. I do want to give out the information for your book, your websites, your email, all of that, so people can contact you. But first, let's listen to another track from Arturo Sandoval's Hot House album. I didn't know the weather was so hot there. That's another synchronicity here tonight. This is Mom Bop.
Thank you.
Arturo Sandoval and Mambop. Adrian, I appreciate you allowing me to play that. I hope they danced again.
Well, the cat was sliding up and down the wall here, I'll tell you that much.
I have to remark how music brings people together. And
absolutely.
It transcends all the bridges of racial bias and ethnic bias and hatred. And I mean, you can't listen to music and not feel good.
Absolutely. And besides, you know, with the fact that we can now exchange ideas and communicate so easily on a global basis, we've realized that we all have basically the same problems, basically the same enemies and foes. So there's no reason why we should fight amongst ourselves. We should gang up and, you know, try and get rid of these guys wherever they are, whether it be in America, in Latin America, in Europe, or wherever.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So much to say, and so much to talk about, and so little time. I know you are about to embark upon your New Year's.
Yes. Yeah, we all are. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. And I wanted to have some music tonight just so we could celebrate a little bit and make this be a little festive. You see, we can talk about all this darkness and bring some light into the world with music. Certainly, we can do that with the solutions. You very well point out in your writing on what we can do and how we can do it. And I want to encourage people to get a copy of your book, The Coming World Government, Tragedy and Hope, with a question mark after it. Can you tell us the easy way to get the book?
Well, the easiest way is this is an ebook, and we're using the funds that we're hopefully raising on that to finance our Second Republic project in English, which is the website on the construction, a whole host of other things we're doing, and promoting Second Republic in Argentina, because I figure if we can get Second Republic going in Argentina, which would be much, much easier than in other countries, it can act like a lighthouse, which will spread, throughout the region and even further afield. The easiest way to do it is if they send me an email to A.R. Salbucci, that's A.R.S.A.L.B.U.C.H.I, @gmail.com, or they can also do that by just visiting my website, which is A.Salbucci, A.S.A.L.B.U.C.H.I, .com.ar, and I will immediately send them the PDF copy.
Okay, and that .ar is important because that goes to Argentina. So
exactly, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes.
I have to have you back on the show. If you have a chance to let me know a little bit about your availability in the month of January, I would love to continue this discussion and go further in depth. I have more reading to do. But I have to say, so far from what I've read, and I'm about halfway through the book, I agree with everything you're saying.
I'm very thankful, Don. It'll be my pleasure. Actually, since it's summer holiday season here, I'll be taking a couple of days off. But after 15th of January, whenever you say, you call the shots, I'm here to at your fullest disposal. So, you know, I'm very thankful, Don, for you having me on the show, actually. And, you know, let's stay in contact, and we're in the same trench, my friend.
Okay. I would like you also, if you care to leave our listening audience with a closing thought or two.
Yeah, basically it's that, you know, we should not let our arms fall. We should keep in mind that it's the psychological warfare that these fiends are exerting against us they try to demoralize us. Basically, they try to make us feel that we are puny and worthless. And part of psychological warfare is to make you think that they are much stronger than they really are and that we are much weaker than we really are. And okay, there is a gap between them up there and us down here, but the gap is not all that big. So let's, you know, let's see things in proper proportion. And as a final thought, let's always remember that a slave is somebody who waits for someone else to come and liberate him.
Yes, very well said. Well, I want to thank you for being on Evident Footprints. I look forward to your next visit sometime in January. And in the meantime, I want to wish you and your family and your friends and the people of Argentina a very happy and prosperous new year filled with solutions.
Thank you, Don. Same to you, same to your family and your loved ones, and same to your wonderful audience. And let's keep fighting in 2011. Happy New Year.
Okay, same to you. Thank you, Adrian.
Cheers.
Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our special guest, Adrian Salbucci. Again, if you missed that email address, arsalbucci, that's spelled SALBUCHI at gmail.com, and get a hold of that book, The Coming World Government, Tragedy and Hope. You owe it to yourself to read up. You'll learn a lot about the United States, I can tell you that, and you'll learn a lot about Argentina as well. Special thanks also to Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world. If you have to miss tomorrow night's show, I want to wish all of you a very happy new year. We will be doing a show tomorrow night with Drew Malone Raines III, former U.S. Marine. And on Friday night, scientist inventor Jim Murray will be with us to take you into the new year. So hopefully you'll tune in. Over at BBS Radio, I want to thank Seth Hendrick on the sound tonight, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.